Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Stephen Reed, part of the team here at Music and Ministry, where we're trying to help you reach who it is that you're called to reach and do what it is that you're called to do. And today we're going to continue our series on the generations and talking about how do we reach the young people? Because by far, that is the question that we have gotten asked the most and have done quite a bit of research, even wrote a book about it, and now are sharing it here with you because we feel like the Lord's called us and equipped us with some answers and at least how to find some of the answers. So let's jump into it. So if you're just joining us, we go through each week and talk about different aspects about music and ministry here in our modern culture. And we just started last week a series on generations, and we talked about how there are these three main things that we kind of have to keep in consideration when we're talking about how do we reach the young people, because young people change as the same way that old people change. And so there's this constant flow of new 20-year-olds. And there's, again, the three things are going to be what is inherent to being 20 or 30 or whatever it is that you consider young that you're trying to reach or whatever generation you're trying to reach. What does it mean to be in that stage of life? And there are some very predictable things that will happen for most everybody at about the same time. Puberty is going to happen. And then there's going to be some brain development things that are going to happen. Relationships start to form and get more serious. Again, basically, that stays the same no matter where you are in the world. But then we have the second thing that's hugely important, which is going to be the culture, because not every culture is the same. And some people don't start dating until much later. Why? Because that's just the culture of the area, and some people get married super young because that's the culture of the area. And so depending on where you grew up and in what group, that drastically changes your experience. Again, are you still a 20-year-old? Are you experiencing things that are similar to most 20-year-olds that have come before? Yeah, there's a measure of it, but there's also this other measure that's drastically different than the other people that are your same age in the world. And then the third thing is going to be what we would call then generations, because cultures are existing and there's always some sort of progressive culture and there's always some sort of conservative culture in different places. But then we have these things that are generational, meaning that they happen to a large group of people. And so we've recently gone through the pandemic, and that would be a great example. And some of the people who were in high school during the pandemic, they didn't get to go to prom, or they didn't get to have graduation, or all the other things, didn't have to take the ACT. That's a pretty big difference for somebody who 5 to 10 years earlier went through basically the same thing, but because it was a different time, it changes things quite drastically. And so these are kind of things that I've talked about here. I talk a lot more about it in the book that I wrote called Generational Worship, The Seed, the Soil, and the Sun. And those are those three things, just kind of in a metaphor analogy of how those things interact, because we need to keep in mind all three of those things. And as we talked about last week, the mistake that most people make is that they try to reach the young people by doing what they liked when they were that age, whatever it is, the age of the people that they're trying to reach. And so not going to go back into that. You should go watch the episode. But when I was 20, life was quite a bit different. And so there's things that I liked as a 20-year-old that the current 20-year-olds do not like. And so we get into these really, it's self-affirming states where all the people who are around us remember that time as well. And they're, oh yeah, that should work because we like that too. And so the bottom line of all of this is that we're talking about is that you have to get to know the people that it is that you're trying to reach. And not just like from a, I'm trying to manipulate you or lead you, like you really have to get to know them. And in the last chapter of my book, I talk about the key ingredient is that you have to love them. Like you have to like really and truly care about them, because if you do that, then you'll find out all of this information. And I go through some of the stories in the book, and I'll share a few as we go through this little Maxa series here of this conversation. But I didn't care at all about older people, or I didn't care about hymns, or all these other things that I grew up with that I didn't like, until I really got to know people of that age and I found out how much it affected them. And then my love for them and how much they were affected by it caused me to like embrace it and enjoy it. And now I'm not saying that I love all hymns or want to go back to sing only hymns, but there are quite a few hymns that mean a lot to me, and I see it on their faces when we sing stuff. And because I love them, then I choose to sing those things, not because I have to, not because I'm ticking a box or trying to do something that's some sort of a gimmick to try and reach more people or say that we're more generational in our church, but it's out of love. And that's a pretty major theme in the Bible, is going to be just learning how to love people, and then you can serve them quite a bit better. So I promised it last week and kind of want to get into the idea of, okay, how are generations defined and why is that important? Because it is, like I said, the mistake is that we want to do what people did when we were our age, and we forget that the generations are different. And so we can dive into a bunch of the reasons why people are different, but as I mentioned again last week, and we'll mention again until we're done with the series, what we're looking for is, what do we have in common? And then understand, okay, what are our differences, and then what are our dislikes? In the sense of, there's some things that I don't hate, but I don't mind as well. And so if we can stay, if we all just had, hey, we all like this, say, you know, we all like pizza, okay, well, let's all go get pizza. But if it's like, we all like pizza and or burgers, well, then we can get pizza and or burgers. I prefer this one to that one, but I also don't mind this one. Whereas if somebody in another generation or group or person in your group was like, no, I hate pizza, well, that kind of, we would need to know that, because we could all then just go have burgers, and then everybody is getting at least something that they like, or at least doesn't hate. So we're trying to live in unity and harmony, as the Bible talks about. And these are some practical ways to help you know what it is that you need to do, or the questions you need to ask of the people that are in your group, because that's really what it comes down to, is you have to know the answer. I can't tell you, oh, millennials are this way, so do this. I can say, you can try this, but you may have a different group of millennials because of your unique culture. And so if you're out somewhere in the middle of Kansas, your culture is a whole lot different than the middle of San Francisco, which is a whole lot different than up in the north somewhere, which is a whole lot different than Nashville. And so we have to customize what it is that we're doing based on who it is that we have, and learn how to ask the right questions. So the thing that's complicated about knowing what the generations are is that these are not like hard and fast rules. The generations are defined very differently by different people, and there just kind of becomes this consensus over the amount of time where we just say, oh yeah, okay, yeah, this is what we're going to call them. And we can go through quite a few of the lists, and there's a lot of debate about exactly when they start and stop, and some people feel like they're on the edge, and some people call them cuspers, meaning that they're kind of in one and another. My generation kind of got split in two, into one and another. And so it's not true science in the sense of, like, there's not like a lab where we're like defining this is what it is. It's usually what happens is somebody writes a book, or somebody gets on a podcast and keeps saying something enough times, and other people keep repeating it to the point where we just kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. All right. So let's kind of go through the current list from oldest to youngest. There is probably no one who's, well, I mean, there's maybe somebody who's still alive in what would be called the greatest generation, which is the GGs, you might have heard of. And that was coined by Tom Brokaw, the nighttime broadcaster who did the news. He wrote a book called The Greatest Generation, and it talked about how those people went through World War II, went through the Great Depression. And so those would be like 120. I mean, those people are up there. If you remember those things, then you're doing pretty great, because you're still here with us. The next generation would be, some people refer to as the radio generation or the silent generation. And these were the ones that did not see the war, would not remember the war, but were still alive during that time, or part of the time, were kids during that time. Because the next generation, which is referred to as the baby boomers, most everybody agrees that's the name, is based on when all of the greatest generation, all the people that came home from the war, there was this kind of period of time where obviously they were all fighting, where there wasn't a whole lot of babies born, but they all came back, the war was over, the depression ended, and things were great. So then a lot of people got married and had a bunch of kids and had the white picket fence and the American dream. And so we saw this huge rush of new births in the United States of America. And so that's why all of those kids are referred to as the baby boomers. And then right below that, coming after them, is what is now referred to almost universally as Gen X, but they for a while were called the me generation, because they had a characteristic of being somewhat selfish And for a while, they were known as the MTV generation, because that was when cable television was readily available, and people then started changing their musical behaviors based on the show MTV, which had obviously a huge impact. So following up, Gen X is going to then be, maybe for a while there was Gen Y, and then eventually just kind of got thrown into being millennials, and that was because the millennium change was happening into the year 2000. But then most people define whether or not you're a millennial is if you can remember 9/11, which was the attack on the Trade Center, and people flew jets into the Trade Center. It was a huge deal. And so if you were, alive, not just alive, but could remember it, that meant, and you were older, but yet not a Gen Xer, that means that you were a millennial. All right, so after that, and again, all the kids that were alive but would not remember that event, start what we now refer to pretty universally as Gen Z, although for a while they were referred to as the I generation because they were kids that had grown up having always had some form of iPad, iPhone, iPod, whatever the I would happen to be. These are some of the kids of the me generation. They are also somewhat known for being selfish or entitled, which is kind of a knock against them, which is also why you get the I generation part. But again, we almost universally refer to them as Gen Z. So then after Gen Z, there's this kind of like vague, like where's the line going to be drawn? What are we going to call them? And so some people say Generation Alpha, and that Generation Beta are now the babies below that. I don't think Generation Alpha is going to stick. Might be something to do with the pandemic, because I believe that's going to be a very distinct moment. If you can remember the pandemic, or specifically if you were in school during the pandemic and can remember it, that will kind of be the bumper zone of defining that generation. And so I have at times called them the Pans. That is not a great name. So if that one sticks, then you heard it here first. But we need to come up with a better name. Pans wouldn't. My wife's not a big fan of that one. So, but it's a very distinct thing. They went through something that the rest of us didn't go through. We didn't have to go into public school and have our temperature taken and wear masks and stay separated and have contact tracing and all the things that I'm probably triggering some PTSD with you right now if you're watching this and younger and remember all those things, or were parents of that and had to deal with it. So the group that is coming then behind them, as I mentioned, is sometimes now being referred to as Generation Beta. Again, still trying to find out, okay, who are they and what are they going to be? What are the things that are going to define them as a group? All right, so as we look at how these are divided, and some of it is in the name, is we see that there are some different reasons why we divide people. So part of it's going to be world events, or at least big scale events. And so that would go for the boomers, meaning the World War was over, they came home, they had a bunch of kids. That would definitely be how their name came to be. Also, how millennials came to be, with the 9/11 being the cutoff, and then obviously the calendar event. And then our current young people, which would be the Pans, that's a terrible name, the Alphas or whatever you want to call them, that went through the pandemic. That was a worldwide event. We also have ones that are based on technology, and a lot of the generations have names or alternate names that involve technological things. The radio generation, The boomers then came and they had television. Then you had the Gen X, which would have been the MTV generation, meaning cable television. Then the millennials grew up with phones and texting and MySpace, internet, computer, and things like that. And then Gen Z, the I generation, with having smartphones and unlimited texting and all that kind of stuff. And some people would refer to like the current generation, maybe it's the AI generation, meaning that they're going to grow up having always experienced AI, where the rest of us are still trying to figure out what's real and what's not real and how that's going to shake out, and whether or not our job's going to exist in a while. So I bring up all of the generational differences because it is important to really know, okay, how are we different? Even though we went through the same essential culture, we went through the same age range, but we didn't do it in the same generation. So there are things that are different, and we think different, we have different priorities, and there's things that we didn't experience that other people did experience. And we can get into this crazy ditch on this side where we say, oh, your experience was so different from mine that it doesn't even compare at all. I can't even imagine having to deal with what it is that you're dealing with as a young person these days. And we can also be in the other ditch that we talked about earlier, which is like, oh no, you're exactly like I was, and this is what you like and what you'll respond to. So there's a happy medium in the middle. But if we don't take time to really get to know these people and recognize that we don't all agree or have the same priorities or the same needs, we'll end up making a lot of mistakes, and then we'll just kind of gradually shift off into different groups, and we won't have that unity that we were hoping for and that we really need as the body of Christ, where the old men and old women are teaching the younger, and that we're having this koinonia, as we say in the church world, or fellowship, where we're sharing of the mutual gifts that we have and the energy of the young people, the wisdom of the old people, all that stuff that can be a lot of fun. So I'll give you an example of how that applies to leading worship as we wrap this up here. And one of those is going to be the difference between millennials and Gen Z. And so I was a youth pastor of millennials. Elder millennial, as we sometimes call. And so millennials are very passionate. They're very cause-driven. It's a big thing with millennials. And there is some element of just like being passionate about things in your 20s and idealistic. And so it was kind of difficult to pick out how passionate they were until the next generation came, which is Gen Z. And they're not that way. And in some ways, people knock them, partly by comparison, as being entitled. And so that just means that if you were a millennial and you were playing soccer, you're like, I'm going to go and I'm going to be the best. I'm going to make it to the major leagues or whatever league it is that you want to be in. I'm going to be a world famous soccer player. And you would go and practice, and your coaches would talk to you and be like, you want to be great. This is what it takes. And then a Gen Z would say like, well, yeah, I'm going to be on this team because that's what I want to do. That's like who I am. And so coaches and youth pastors had a very hard time motivating people to work harder or to put in the time because they already felt like it was going to happen. And so how that all happened is kind of, you know, like up for debate, but certainly those that are millennials are the children of the baby boomers. And so they themselves were quite cause driven and anti-war and hippie things and all that kind of protest stuff. So they raised kids that are also very cause driven. That makes sense. And so when I was youth pastoring millennials, I was able to motivate them through cause and through my passion for what it is that we were doing, stirred them to action and to responding to how we were hoping they would respond. And they all graduated out one year. I had a large group of seniors that we were doing great. We were like the biggest youth group in town, man. I felt so good. And then they all left and all I had was Gen Z kids. And I could not get them to do nothing. And I was a much better youth pastor. I had my stuff together. We had more finances. I was better organized. And yet my approach to ministry was just falling flat. And they would just stare at me and I would stare at them and I'd be like, why are you not doing what we were hoping you would do and not responding how we thought you would? And honestly, it didn't really go very well. And so our group was much smaller and I struggled as much as I could, but felt like the grace had left. And thankfully some other kids that we had trained up came back and were willing to take it. And they were able to go and grow it to a much larger number than what I had shrunk down to because they spoke their language. And so I was running into the same thing when I was leading worship. And so when I started asking, okay, how do we reach the young people? I was like, oh man, like the young people right now are this Gen Z group that like, I don't know that I speak their language. And so I started interviewing people and reading books. And the thing that really helped me was talking to school teachers because they had gone through quite a bit of training because they have to learn how to reach the current group of students, and they can't wait for all these other books to come out and things to find consensus. They got like, we got these 8 years or 4 years, whatever division of high school or middle school that you got. And so they were saying that like for Gen Z, everything's relational, meaning you can't just tell them something. You have to tell them why it's important to you, how it affects you, some sort of personal story. And so that really got me like I don't do any of that. Like I'm just like, this is it. And my respond to my passion and the call on your life and who it is you're supposed to become, that doesn't mean anything to them. And so when we started then looking and be like, okay, when I go to lead worship, I can't just play passionate and sing passionately. They're not going to respond to that. I have to talk to them. And so I would then, instead of just singing, would say, hey, we're going to sing this song that I've been singing all week because it's really been helping me get through some stuff and I think it's going to help you. And just that little bit of information was enough to connect them to me, to this moment, to give it a chance. So as we were then singing it, I would be looking for these connection points. And if we got to the chorus, or I would say, this is my favorite part. And then we would sing it. And you're just like, well, why do you need to say that? And other generations, they don't need that. They don't have that need. They would prefer that you just sing it or they get it. Now, I also have to make sure that it's in these short packages because the other generations don't need it. They have their own things. So for baby boomers, they want it to be not religious. And that is really the key there. But for Gen X, they want it to be cool. They want it to have whatever modern connection with being culturally relevant would be the buzz phrase. And then for millennials, they want passion and they respond to passion. They want to live for something worth dying for. And so when we then do what it is that these other generations need, we just have to make sure that we're doing it in a way that doesn't annoy them or anger them, that would cause them not to want to be a part of it. But it was an easy adjustment, and man, the difference that it made was unbelievable. And I went from not being able to lead that group very well at all to doing really well and just being like, I could have been doing this the whole time. Again, how did I figure that out? I realized it wasn't going well. I loved that group of people and wanted to reach them. And so I had this care and this desire, and that caused me to reach out and to interview people and do some research and try stuff, and then was able to then get it to where, like, I feel like I do pretty well with that group. And then there's our current young people, young again defining how that, but would be the pandemics, the pans, the alphas, if you want to call them that, where their biggest need is authenticity, meaning they want something real. And as part of the things that I've been mentioning in some of the other episodes, the other generations don't necessarily have that need, and they're okay with something that's fake as long as it's passionate, as long as it's relatable. And this group is like, I don't want anything that's not real. I want something that's actually real, because they've had a hard time figuring out what's real and not real, what's news and what's fake news and what is actually helpful. Their entire life they've been having to deal with that. And so they're hungry for it. And so I believe that there's a great opportunity for us as a church, because that's what we're good at, or should be good at, is the truth. And the truth, well, if knowing the truth and the truth will set you free, that's in the Bible. So we should have the corner on the market on that one. So I know that was a lot. I always say that it was a lot, but hopefully it will point you in the right direction. Again, I encourage you to get the book. You can check it out. It's at amazon.com. in print, in audio, and in ebook format. It might even be available at your local library, at least on the digital versions. And you can check out all the other stuff that we have at musicandministry.co. If there's anything we can do for you, don't hesitate to ask. And until next time, God bless.